Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome to the show today. I'm very excited to introduce a wonderful woman that I met down at the farmer's market in Missoula a few weeks ago. Her name is Billy Gray. She has a business called Billy Gray Landscape Design and also Graysnoke Gardens in Missoula, Montana. So welcome to the show today, Billy Gray.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Well, happy to have you. So go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, I'm an independent gardener and business, and I have been doing this since 1972. So I do consultations and recommendations and plant ID and sell plants. Some I dig out of my garden and others that I have order in and grow up to be able to have a wider variety. So been happy to be in the market for, I think I've been there 25 years now.
Wow. And that's the farmer's market, you mean? Happy to be at the
Missoula farmer's market.
Okay. Okay. So I always kind of like to start out the beginning of this show having my guest tell us a little bit about your very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, were you a little kid? Were you a young adult? You know, just tell us a little bit about how you got started gardening.
Well, my mom was a free gardener, and there were things that she allowed me to assist with, and I thought I was being very helpful. And most of the time, she would have to come back and redo whatever it was that I did. So I think I might have been about 5 or 6. And I think that that's probably a lot of the same sort of events that happen when you're a little kid. So then we moved around a lot, and we had a lot of other experiences in different places. But one of the best things, one of the best things I remember from that period was that she had a compost pile, and she threw potato peelings and everything into it, and lo and behold, potatoes would grow in it. So that was always an exciting thing when we got to dig out the potatoes.
I remember things like that too. Digging out the potatoes when you're young. There's nothing like fresh potatoes out of the garden, I think, when
right.
you're a kid and you're like, wow, these come out of the soil. So, okay, so then the next question I kind of like to ask everybody is, like, what does organic gardening mean to you?
Oh, well, improving the soil as much as it can be, as it can support magically, of course, whatever you want to put in it. And as far as your plants or your veggies or trees or whatever, because I'm a great one for feeding the soil good stuff and trying to teach people that if you don't feed the soil, then there isn't going to be anything in there. Montana has really rich mineral soils, but there's not very much in the way of the organic factor. So compost is essential, and good compost is sometimes hard to come by. So it's best make your own, because if you don't know what your sources are for it, then you can get into lots of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We had a lot of a rash of bad compost in Missoula a few years back, where people were getting their compost from manures that the cows had been feeding on pastures that had been sprayed with Tordon, which never breaks down, I don't think. And so I can get pretty excited over that. And then, of course, when they plant their things in it, then it has a very bad effect on
That's kind of been a common theme of a lot of my guests on the show, to make sure that the manure you're getting comes from animals that have not been fed weed-free hay.
Right. Right.
Which
exactly.
is always a hard one for me, because I think weed-free, chemical-free, but it's the opposite. Weed-free means it has the chemicals on it.
It's a tough call, and I think we're getting better. I think things have, but it's there, and so it's going to be there for probably our lifetimes anyway, and having effects, bad effects on your produce.
Mm-hmm. So then, who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
Oh, well, it was, I belonged in garden clubs for a long time, and we had quite a few here in this area. They were very active, and there were a lot of people that went both ways, you know, with their things, and got excited about whatever was going on, new that was introduced every year. And I have to say that I'm not entirely, I can't say that I'm an absolute entirely organic. I don't grow things with a lot of chemicals, but and the herbicides are very touchy, but there's some things out there that I don't know what we're going to do when they decide to take over the world, because they're trying real hard, and that's a lot of the bad weeds, and they're so greedy that they just keep coming no matter what you do. And I know
like spotted, like spotted knapweed, is that what you mean? Like stuff like that?
No, you can, if you, unless you have acres of it that you have to deal with. How can you do a farm that has 500 acres of knapweed on it and be able to, you can't even get from one end to the other if you're trying to pull it.
Right.
But
well, there's,
but it is pullable, you know, it's just that the seed is viable for 50 years, so keep it mowed.
But I think they have a couple of ways to get rid of that. Like there's some bugs or something, some that you can get from the extension service that will.
Yeah, well, we're still in the experimental stage with that.
Oh, I kind of wondered about that too. And then I guess sheep really like to eat knapweed.
And the sheep really like to eat the knapweed, but that, of course, is like pinching and plaque a plant. You know, if you take the top off and or down, then it sprouts again. And in some of the bad weed stuff, if you cut it off, I'm thinking now of the leafy spurge and the cancer of the garden, which is the Campanula rapunculoides. And then they have triple root systems. So there's a root group at the base of the stem where it comes out of the ground, and there's a lot of little white roots around that, and you think you pull it off, and it has a really pretty flower, so it has a lot of appeal for a lot of people. And it was brought in as with pioneers that came in. And what happens when you pull that stem off, or that you've got the roots, you don't have the roots. It has broken off from the roots that go to the white radish that's about 8 inches down, 12 inches maybe, and is a double root, which is attached to a long lateral root that is probably out of sight. It's so deep. But I've been in up to my shoulder in holes after it, and I haven't found the bottom.
Oh.
But it's woody. It's a woody root, and runs. I'm convinced here in Missoula, which has a fair square mileage in it. Mm-hmm. It's about 50 miles across in Missoula County, and I'm convinced that the entire county is all the same plant. So, yeah. And I think that bindweed and leafy spurge and that probably have all the same characteristics. Very difficult. I don't know what to do with them. Mm-hmm. To control them. I know you can keep them cut down, and I know you can pull them off. And what I find is that they pop up elsewhere.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So, like from that root underneath the ground.
Yeah. They have a node that runs along the lateral root, mm-hmm. and it grows rampantly. And so I don't know that anybody has ever, even if you do spray it with something noxious, it knocks it back and it delays it from doing things maybe even a couple or 3 years, but then it comes back.
Oh. You know, one thing that I found with spotted knapweed is that the best thing to combat that is having a healthy lawn or having, you know, and it's tough because we have 20 acres and we have a meadow that has quite a bit of knapweed in it that, like, you know, we can't water, we can't plant anything down there. But like around our house, I know the best thing we can do is keep, you know, things watered and keep healthy stuff growing.
Right.
Anyway, Billy Gray, tell us about something that grew well this year. Let's talk about this year's garden, something that grew really well, or maybe like last summer.
Well, last summer was very difficult because spring was so late, mm-hmm. and then it got so hot, and things just really didn't know what to do. But this year, spring was very early, mm-hmm. and now we are in the hottest part of summer, and I dread this.
At the end of June, or what are we, July 2nd today?
We had July 2nd today, but we've had 90 degrees now for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So... or the triple digit ones that were in there also.
Yeah. So,
but that was the coolest it got during the day, for instance. And that's unprecedented. We haven't ever had that kind of thing.
So is something
as
coming up good,
I'm
though? Because I know our garden's growing like weed this year.
Oh,
I mean, it's
right.
Just doing great.
It's burgeoning. So do you know the gas plants? I have a funny story about gas plants.
No, tell us your funny story about the gas plants. What's a gas plant?
Gas plant is Dictamnus purpurea. It's a beautiful, beautiful, it's one of my favorite perennials. It gets about 3-4 feet tall, has a gorgeous spike, foliage is aromatic, and the deer don't like it, and it's beautiful even when it isn't in bloom. So I recommended it for a job one time, and we had not had very much publicity about it, and I don't have very many pictures of it, and there aren't very many people who know about it. So the lady was not familiar with it, except she saw it in my garden, and she liked it. So she looked it up on her computer, and she asked for gas plants, and of course what came up on the gas plant site was a gas plant of oil or a gas, what do they call them? I can't even think of what
they
call them.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it looks like a military fortress, but with lots of tanks and where they refine, the refinery, there
right?
It is.
Like a plant, and, that, not like a plant that grows in the ground, like a plant, like a...
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
A building.
Uh-huh. And that was kind of a shocker to her because that was definitely not what she had seen in my garden. We had a good laugh over that one.
That's cute.
But when we asked for the botanical name, and of course it was a whole lot easier to get to it on Google.
All right. Well, how about, is there something you're excited to do next year, or something different or something new you're going to try? Or this summer coming up, something you haven't done before?
Oh, probably not anything much different from what I've been doing. I'd like to see if I could find some more ferns. Yep. I had a really good source for a long time of Varnady ferns, but my lady passed away, which was sad, and now it's even sadder because there really isn't anybody doing that. And it's
did she live right there in Missoula, or did she live somewhere else?
Yeah, she lived here.
Oh.
And
well, maybe that'll be a new opportunity for somebody.
Somebody
ferns.
To think about doing that, yeah. She collected the spores and started them from spores, which is tedious and long-term.
Oh, it sounds kind of difficult.
It is, and you have to have things set up just right, and it's not my forte on that end of it, so I'm not...
Now, tell us about growing ferns. Do you put those right outside in your garden? Do you have to put them in the shade?
Oh, yeah.
Do they grow right in the sun?
Well, some will grow in the sun, but most of them are shade lovers. Mm-hmm. So shady gardens are, it's a funny thing. You know, when you start out with a new house and a new lot, it's bare. And so you plant trees. Mm-hmm. And eventually your trees grow up. And so your environment changes drastically. And people really don't consider that when they're starting out or when they buy a house that has young trees on it, that these things are going to get big. And eventually they don't have the sunny areas that they started out with. So they have to change their environment or cut down trees. Well, that's a terrible contemplation. So... you change over to a shady garden kind of thing. And shady gardens are very, very nice to have, and I promote them a lot. So,
and they're probably very popular this summer.
Well, people are looking for shade. So.
Yeah.
I had a boss one time that did a commercial on for his business, which was a very nice garden center, and it was him being Aristotle and making these profound statements like, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and the second best is now, mm-hmm. which I have sort of lived by for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
And that goes for a lot of things, even besides gardening. It also kind of goes for, you know, starting a business or any kind of thing like that, just changing careers or taking a new step in your life. The best time might have been 20 years ago, and the next best time is today.
Yeah.
All right. How about something that didn't work so well last season or that's not quite working? Is there something that didn't work so well that you were disappointed in or frustrated or anything?
Well, the biggest thing that happened to me last year mm-hmm. was I have a small greenhouse, and I heat it with propane. Mm-hmm. And I have a very nice company that comes and makes automatic deliveries mm-hmm. and keeps track of me and takes really, really good care of me. And in... some period in the past year, a year ago, they were bought out by another company, and somewhere in the changeover, my little account got dropped, and so I was not aware that there was no delivery, and so I ran out of propane, and that was in the coldest time of the season. Of the winter, and so I lost a lot of stuff.
Oh,
that was very, very sad, and it was a big wake-up call for me, is to be more aware of what's going on in the winter. I tend to hibernate a lot in the winter. I'm mm-hmm. not a winter person.
Oh, you're not?
I am not. And so I put the things to bed and cover them up, and then I tend to hibernate in
right.
my house
uh-huh.
and read a lot. Mm-hmm. So time went by, and lo and behold, when I started things up in March, there were lots of things that didn't start. So
aww.
That was a very bad experience, and I caution people to pay attention to what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, how about something that you find is easy to grow and successful almost every time, like generally successful?
Oh, well, let's see. I think one of the best things I've got that are kind of happy. Unfortunately, I say that, and everything that is like that requires some attention also. So things like Coreopsis longiflora, or grandiflora, rather, is a very happy plant, and it is easy to grow and loves the sun and produces from, this year it's going to be June. Mm-hmm. Usually it starts in July, but it's going to go until frost if you keep it deadheaded. So the thing about that is that you have to go out and deadhead it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to leave a few of them at the end to ripen off seed, and so you have some coming on, because it is a biennial, and but it is prolific. It makes a good cut flower, and it is so sunny, It's gold in color, yellow,
mm-hmm.
but not a soft yellow. It's bright gold, mm-hmm. yellow gold, and it just is prolific,
mm-hmm.
and it's probably one of the best things I have as far as looking good.
Now, do you want to explain to listeners what a biennial is? Because nobody's talked about that yet, I don't think.
Oh. Well, biennial is that it has a two-year life cycle, and which means that from seed, the first year, it will produce a rosette. And a lot of our favorite flower
right.
plants are biennials.
Mm-hmm.
So hollyhocks and pansant, most of the pansies, and sweet william, and foxgloves, they're all biennials. So they produce their first rosette in that first year. The second year they produce the bloom. And then they produce seed and they die. So you want something coming on. It takes 2 years to get a cycle started.
But then they bloom pretty regularly after that, right?
They bloom. When they start blooming, they're pretty much on for a long time. They have long periods of bloom, yeah.
But, I mean, then do they bloom every year after that, or is it every two years?
No, they die. They only live for 2 years.
And then they just die altogether?
They die altogether. But their progeny, if you've allowed some to go to seed, will produce the next generation, the next.
Because I was thinking ours just keep coming back. We haven't planted them in years, and they're all over my garden. We have
What are you?
We have those Coreopsis, and then Campanellas, and Foxglove, and the Sweet Williams, Pinks. Right?
Yeah.
Some of the
Sweet William is one variety of the Dianthus, and mm-hmm. the Pinks are others, and those are perennials, most of them.
Yeah.
And but the Sweet William is a biennial, although some of them have a little longer life cycle because some of the hybrids are much more long-lasting.
Yep.
than the species varieties.
Yeah, and then Mike's already, he was on me this morning about getting some deadheading done. He said, the bees aren't going to have anything to eat if you don't deadhead these flowers.
Mm-hmm.
How about your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there anything you have to just force yourself to get out there and do?
No. They seem to like most of what I've got, and they were really busy on the gas plant when it was in bloom.
Yep.
It's a wonderful perennial. And everybody knows what your perennials are, I think.
Go ahead and tell everybody again. I usually try to mention it, but go ahead and tell everyone.
Well, a perennial is once it starts, then it does grow on. And some are longer lived than others. Peonies, for instance, are generational. They go from one people generation to another people generation. So, and some of them have been, like people brought their grandmother's perennials with them when they moved or mm-hmm. something. And there's another one that I was going to mention. Now it went out of my head. But in any case, once they start producing bloom, then they will do that for their season every year. And many things are, in the perennial things, are early, mid-season, and late within their blooming season. So you can have a long period, if you know, iris, for instance, or daylilies, are have a long season of bloom. If you have start with them, like iris will start blooming March with some of the real early ones. The bulb iris, for instance, the little Danforti eyes and the reticulatas, and they start very early, and they bloom with the crocus. And then the next ones are going to be the little bearded iris, the dwarfs, miniature dwarfs, and then standard dwarfs. Mm-hmm. And these are progressive in their season of bloom. So intermediate bearded and then the tall bearded. And now, of course, now we have re-blooming iris that will start again in August to bloom. Once they have a rest period after they're through, and for us, it's June is our peak bloom time.
Now, do you have to cut them to get them to rebloom? Like cut them down at the base, cut those flowers off?
What we've learned over the years is that there's an awful lot of nutrition in those stems, so don't cut the stems. Just cut off under the spent
bloom
head.
Okay.
They're done. Yeah, but leave the stem because there's a lot of groceries in there for them.
Oh.
Until it turns brown and then you can take it off.
Okay.
And then the ones that are rebloomers will start blooming again in, for us it's in August. Mm. But it requires them being watered and fed to get good blooms again.
All right. I don't know that we've ever had irises bloom in August at our place, but maybe we don't have, you said, are they special kind of bulbs that you have to get for rebloom?
They are. They're fairly recent introductions, 20 years probably. They've been on the market now.
Cool.
But, they started out in California,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of people that were growing them down there. We now have some that will do for us where they are hardy enough to get through our season. And some of them are fairly reliable. I don't know which ones those are. Those, you'd have to look that up on the iris mm-hmm. rebloomer thing on Google. But there are this same thing going on with the daylilies that there's, you know, there's thousands of varieties. mm-hmm. It's mind-boggling. And I have one that has been a really good seller for me is it's a dwarf, one like Stella Doral was the first one that reblooms. And mine is Happy Returns. And now there are more, lots of them. So that's another one that you can Google and look up.
Do you have some successful tips for people that want to get started selling flowers at the market? Because I saw somebody had posted on Facebook the other day. They had some beautiful bouquets and some tiger lilies and what made me think of it in there. And they said they couldn't hardly give them away at their market. Do you have any suggestions for people that are just starting out on taking flowers to the market?
Well, I don't know because I don't do cut flowers and the people that I do know sell out. They just all sell out rapidly, as long as they are in a bouquet and your price is good. And I don't know other than that.
That could be the market in Missoula, though. Maybe those. And the Missoula Farmers Market gets a big crowd.
Yeah. And there's a lot that, you know, it's not one of the more essential things.
So
but
then,
lots of people buy bouquets, and so, because they like their cut flowers.
So you're selling the actual plants?
Yeah.
So maybe that might be something they might look into, too.
Right.
Instead of selling bouquets, if they're having a hard time with selling bouquets at their market, maybe they might want to sell plants and starts and things like that.
Well, it's a good supplemental income as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't depend on it for a living, but mm-hmm. it helps.
And you said in the beginning in the introduction that you and your husband started by selling ferns out of your yard?
Yeah. I have a wonderful fern. It's I call it a thug because it does spread. It's ostrich fern, and it's a great fern if you have the room for it. It's not good for a teensy place, although it can be very dramatic, and you don't if it puts up too many progeny, then you can give them away until people are sick of them, and then you can just compost them. But they're beautiful. They get about, when they're well grown in a happy place for them, then they can get 4 or 5 feet tall.
Oh, cool.
So they're very dramatic, and kind of like a large sword fern, but they're softer frond than the sword ferns are. But that's how we started anyway. So,
how about, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden? What do you love to do out there the most?
Oh, well, when I'm dreaming about it, I can take my cup of tea out and wander through and not be compelled to bend over and pull all the weeds I see.
That's a tough one, isn't it? I know. Every time I go out there, I'm like, oh, look at that little one. I better grab that one. How about, what's the best gardening advice you have ever received?
The best gardening. One of the things that I learned, I don't know that I have ever had anybody actually tell me formally to do it, was to do some exercises before you go out and start in the garden. Because we get a little bit lax about that kind of thing, and especially starting up in the spring. But it's better to do a few stretches and bendings before you go out and really start stretching and bending and mm-hmm. hauling and pulling and
I do think that weeding in the garden is kind of like yoga a lot. And you do get to stretch quite a bit out there.
Right. And I can zone out just perfectly. There is no world other than the things that I'm trying to pull out.
How about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what would your can't live without tool be?
Oh, probably my dandelion digger. Huh? I do a lot with it.
How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine? You said you read a lot in the winter. Got any favorite gardening books that our listeners could recommend to listeners?
Oh, yeah. One of the best authors we've got going right now is Lauren Springer. And for people that are in the mountains, there is her book, because her very first book was written when she was living in Gunnison, Colorado, and that now the name of it went out of my head. But look up Lauren Springer, and
you
get quite a few. She's got several out now. And then Zone 4 magazine is a terrific publication. Mm-hmm. And I like Fine Gardening also.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard of that. That's a magazine, Fine Gardening, huh?
Fine Gardening, yeah.
All right, I'll have to check that out. And Zone 4, they're right out of Montana here in Bozeman, right?
Right.
I've had a couple other people recommend that. Okay, final question. Are you ready? It's kind of a doozy.
Okay.
If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or an organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel, Billy Gray, is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally or nationally or on a global scale?
Stopping fracking.
Cool. The water, that's a great one.
So there's an organization that I get, their newsletter is Food and Water Watch.
Cool. I get that in the email too.
Yeah.
Excellent. Oh. Super. Do you want to explain to listeners what fracking is in case there's somebody out there that's never heard of it?
Oh, somebody would catch me up on being technical about it, I guess. I'm not a scientist. And
all right.
Probably make some kind of an error.
Well, pretty much I'll just give a brief, just kind of for listeners, that fracking is basically a way of extracting either, I think it's like natural gas or some kind of thing that we're going to use for energy. But what they do is they pour all this really nice fresh water down into the hole so the drills can spin. And then they have to put some
With lots of toxic chemicals.
Yeah, they have to put these chemicals in with that water. And then even after they've extracted their energy resource, I want to say it's natural gas.
Oil.
But I'm kind of, yeah, some kind of thing that's going to make our cars run or our homes warm or whatever that. But it's just really toxic to the world. And people like who live in places where they're fracking are having like huge problems with their water. Some of them can like, you can see the experiments on TV where they're lighting the water on fire. Like, that kid from Columbia who did the Gasland movie on HBO. If you haven't seen Gasland, that's a great way to learn about fracking. And then the worst part about it is then after they're done, that water that they've used is just totally toxic and has to be like capped underground. And it just, you know, we just need to find a better way to solve our energy problems than fracking.
Well, so, we're going to run out of water.
So I hope this
takes millions of gallons per well.
Right.
Millions and millions of gallons.
Yeah. And it really contaminates it. The people that live in places where they're fracking, and they're banning it. You know, lots of states are banning it and people are working together. So hopefully, but you know, there's big lobbies.
So the word's getting out. It's just that it's slowly going and there's a lot of competition for it.
Yep. And certainly lots of controversy. All right. How about an inspirational tip or something to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Oh, well, the best one I ever heard was when I was 11 or 12, my mom had a heart attack. It wasn't a real bad heart attack, but it was a warning sign. And her doctor told her, Lucille, if you want to live a nice, long life, take care of yourself. Eat right, exercise, do all the good things, and plant a garden. Because if you do that, you will be forced to look ahead, and heart patients tend to be depressed, thinking that their life is over. And if you plant a garden, you are forced to look ahead.
Nice.
Forward.
Cool. Perfect.
You can't be a gardener and not be an optimist.
Right.
Because you will put that plant in the ground or that seed. You plant it and you expect it to grow.
And I also think, like, I'm already seeing like this year, I had this idea that I was going to plant 750 sunflowers and try to see if I could take, you know, grow enough sunflowers that in the August and September and stuff I would pick enough blooms that I could take them to market and be consistent. And I'm already seeing that. I definitely put most of my seeds in the ground too late. Like, my very first ones I planted on Earth Day, the week of Earth Day, are as tall as me. They're 5 foot tall. They're the only ones that I really have any hope for. And the other 600 and whatever 50 that I planted after Earth Day, they might, I mean, they might bloom. They're probably not going to go to seed, I guess, is the, you know, and so it's okay if they bloom, I guess, if I'm going to sell them to market. Maybe I'm just being paranoid, but, you know, some of them are still only like 1 or 2 inches. And when I look at them compared to these ones that are 5 feet tall already, I'm just like, well, you know, so, but my point is that I'm totally optimistic because I'm like, all right, I know what to do next year to do it better.
Right.
So there's the optimism of a gardener.
And one of the things about gardening is it teaches you something new every year.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever the same.
And I think that you kind of get challenged because something's growing. You know, I have been successful somewhat, and, you know, and like I said, I might get blooms off of all of them. I just might not get seeds. So,
right.
But yeah, definitely like excited to try again next year and do better. So, well, Billy Gray, thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge with us and talking to me today. Do you just want to say goodbye to the listeners?
Well, I enjoyed it very, very much, and it was fun visiting with you, and keep gardening.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. Thanks again for listening, and grow local.